Hello, and welcome to Anime Journey to the West. I'm Coley Boyd, and here are my friends!
Hello, I'm Zeb Berryman. My pronouns are he and him.
Hi, I'm Lydia Lewis. My pronouns are they, them.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. My pronouns are she, her. And at this point in time, I was the bodacious barista, but we'll get a new transition later on.
Yeah.
I liked when you did the bodacious badass.
Thank you.
So, this episode had some technical difficulties, and this is an episode that we re-recorded. So if we sound different compared to later episodes, now you know why!
Basically, the whole recording for this episode got absolutely destroyed. There were some technical difficulties that came up, and so we're re-recording this today.
Yes. We are much further in on the series than we were when we recorded this, but we're going to try to avoid talking about any kinds of spoilers or anything.
Also, no predictions, because that would be absurd.
Yes. All right, let's just jump in. This episode is called Whirlwind, Burning Resolve. We get part of the ending of the last episode. After Romeo breathes her name, Cielo starts making noise, breaking them both out of their spell. Romeo runs outside, leaving Juliet inside blushing.
Okay, can I just say, this is a trope that works on me. I read way too much shoujo manga. It's like rotted my brain. It really has. Like, people complain about rom-coms, they don't know shit about shoujo manga and how it rots your brain. Like, actually falling on each other and going, like, the in sudden intense sexual romantic tension and energy as you lock eyes after you fall on somebody and you both blush. Oh my, it gets me. It's just, I'm like a Victorian maiden, like, fluttering a fan in my face. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's fair. It is a real nice trope.
Yeah.
Also, before we get much further, there was something that was in that episode that we have lost that I wanted to bring up again.
Yeah.
The flower symbolism.
The flower symbolism.
Oh, right. Of course.
So, flowers, they come up again and again in this anime. It gets even more noticeable later on. So, the Capulets, Juliet's family, you know, they have a red crest, they have the iris, that is their symbol. Irises have some pretty interesting meanings. Typically, they mean compassion, justice, purity, and they also have a very interesting tie-in to Greek mythology. They're typically the symbol of the Greek goddess Iris, who is a messenger god. Rainbows are also associated with her. In Japan, they're pretty interesting because in Japan, they typically represent purity and they're actually used a lot to get rid of bad energy or bad spirits. And fun fact, France has the fleur de lis, which is, you know, the symbol of the family. It's a very traditional symbol for France in general now. And it's a stylized iris. Irises kind of have typically this associated with nobility because of that, and it ties very well into the fact that Juliet's family was nobility and they were kings and queens at one point. Also, the standards of an iris, which will come up quite a bit in this episode, those are the top three petals of an iris. And typically, some, especially when it regards to the French fleur de lis, it's associated with integrity, nobility, and also the common people, or what the three standards are supposed to represent. Now, moving on to Romeo, you know, his family crest is blue with the rose. You have that nice kind of primary color duality with the two of them. Obviously, red roses come up a lot in this series. You see red roses, but because his family crest is blue, I'm going to take a moment to talk about blue roses. Blue roses, because they're artificial, and because it's very much what people assign, flower symbolism is very loose. It's heavily based off of other people's interpretations, different cultures, and just sometimes even just how certain people feel about them. And for blue roses, you have a lot. Some people say it means love at first sight, something that's unattainable. a dream. It can also mean that you're artificial and fake because blue roses don't truly really exist in nature and they're artificial at best.
We're going to one day see blue roses in real life thanks to some wacky florist, aren't we? And that's going to become outdated.
Oh, probably. I mean, they do have dyed roses.
So, fun fact, we do have real life blue roses now that are not dyed. Thanks to genetic splicing.
Nice. There's also, at least, I think the Japanese creators might have been aware of this Chinese fairy tale. Not because all Asian cultures are the same, that is shitty and racist, but because you do have a lot of Chinese stories that influence anime, and because they have, I would say China and Japan have, it's easier to travel to Japan and China from either of those countries than it is from the US. So that is why I'm saying they're more likely to know this story.
Also, this anime was made in like 2005 and the internet existed.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, I like to research fairy tales and myths from other countries because I'm that kind of person. So I don't want anybody thinking I'm painting a broad brush for different cultures because that is that's a terrible thing to do and that's unfair. And unfortunately, especially Asian culture, at least in the US, has unfortunately been thought to be the same thing interchangeable when it's not. So I just want to make that very clear. This Chinese myth called the Legend of the Blue Rose, this girl, she's like the daughter of a local nobleman, and he wants her to get married. And she's like, fine, I'll get married, but I want a guy to give me a blue rose. And all these suitors come out, and they're all trying to figure out how to give her a blue rose. One guy gives her a painted one. She's like, no. One guy tries giving her one made of sapphire. No. One guy tries using magic to get an illusion one. She's like, you're a liar. Get out of here. And it turns out she's in love with the gardener's son. And she really wants to marry him. And she's like, there's no way I can marry you because blue roses don't exist. So the gardener's son, because at this point, the nobleman's desperate to get his daughter married. Like, I need an heir. I need you to marry. Come on. So the gardener's son gets a white rose and he comes up to her and he's like, it's a blue rose. And she says, yes. But everybody's like, it's not a blue rose, blah, blah, blah. And the nobleman goes, my daughter says it's a blue rose. It's a blue rose. Because she truly loves this man, she thinks it's a blue rose because she truly loves him. And they get married and happily ever after. It's a story about getting the unattainable, wanting, that sort of thing. It's really great.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, so back to the episode. Romeo calms Cielo with his shirt off, but while he's doing this, he wonders why Juliet was disguised as a boy, showing that William's plays are truly not popular at this point.
And poor Cielo, we all know what happened to Cielo. Like, you know, he has to die.
No, we don't.
Hey.
We do not
didn't
know
even
what
let me finish my joke. We all know he dies fighting the Mecha Dragon in Neo Verona. And we also learned that, he's the sled.
Anime naming convention of like, oh, is this like the future of somewhere? It's Neo whatever. I'm like, you know what? That checks out because when America was colonized, like the Dutch were like, this is New Amsterdam and New York and straight up New England. New version of England for the pilgrims.
In Guilty Gear, there's a place called Neo New York.
So New New York.
Yes.
I appreciate New New York.
It's a fucking Futurama joke.
It's yes, also it a Doctor Who joke.
It is a Doctor Who joke.
I'm slowly getting to Doctor Who, and the fact, like, I'm just impressed with a franchise that large and that bizarre.
Yes, we need to get back on topic.
Yes.
We do.
So, Juliet comes up and gives him something to cover himself with. Notably, while she talks, she keeps up the Odin voice.
Underfluid Juliet.
Yeah.
Also, Romeo's just like, he's the anime version of Shang from Mulan because he just does not care. Like, the bisexuality does not bother me. It's the fact that you did not trust me to talk to me about these things bothers me.
Yeah. Romeo asks the obvious question of why, and she tells him to let it be. We get a quick scene at the secret base. Conrad is mad Juliet is not back yet. Francisco asks Antonio if he knows about this, and he says he doesn't. Conrad states that since Juliet is the last shining jewel of House Capulet, they must protect her. We get a beautiful shot of some irises with water dripping from them. God, this show is pretty. Romeo says that he's fine taking Juliet home, but she declines. She apologizes for burning his shirt and goes to run off, but he asks if he'll see her again. She pauses and then says he will. Then she runs off. We get a final shot of the irises dripping with water.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Cordelia is walking around town. She sees a woman begging a baker for a larger ration of food for her kids. He apologizes, but says this is all he could give. When Cordelia asks what's going on, she learns that the Montagues have done this proclamation of martial law and demanded food rationing to punish the people until they give up the Red Whirlwind. The ridiculously evil Captain of the Guard, Saruman, shows up and makes a speech so over-the-top dickish that it makes Lord Montague sound like a nice guy with a few weird opinions.
It's amazing.
He blames the Red Whirlwind for the situation and declares that anyone who turns him in gets an extra food ration.
Because the Red Whirlwind is totally the one who is responsible for getting rid of your food and totally not the person who gave the order to make sure that everyone had to ration everything.
Also, I'm just going to say it. It's just straight up the English voice actor's voice for Vegeta that they're using for this, and like, good for him. I'm not saying he's a bad or evil person, but his voice delivery, I'm like, God, I would be very scared to hear this man speak in public. I'd be like, oh, I don't, I'm like, I gotta leave. I don't feel safe. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy. I'm not saying he secretly feeds orphan children to alligators, because I'm sure he's a very lovely, nice man.
He just has a menacing aura.
Yeah.
His voice is just, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
His voice is badass. He has a really good villain voice and a really good gruff badass voice.
Yeah.
So, which is just a testament to his acting.
But yeah, either way, it gives an aura of, oh no, if I stick around you, I'm going to die. I'm the extra who's about to die, either so that you're a badass villain or you're going to violently avenge my death because you're the anti-hero.
That, or you kill me and then you reform and no one really brings up your genocide or war crimes ever again.
You might even canonically blow up multiple planets. Though, technically the Dragon Balls kind of fixed that one for Vegeta, I guess.
Because everyone that was murdered by Frieza except planet Vegeta is fine.
Was there a reason why planet Vegeta didn't come back?
Because it was too long ago, apparently. Anyway, back to Romeo and Juliet number 5, because do we all have ADHD now? Am I the only one that... Did I infect you all? Is this how it works now?
Hey, I don't have ADHD because I'm trying to recap this episode. He then smirks and adds dickishly, I needed to remind you, all this cannot be collected if you starve to death. Ha 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 ha. And then thus I bring an end to the Red Whirlwind. Ha ha ha. Then he goes off to kick puppies and drown orphans.
And he's only like half as evil as a real cop.
Yeah.
Right?
This character wakes up every day with a genuine smile because he gets to do what he's always wanted his whole life, and that is to kill and hurt people, and he gets money for it, and he can't get arrested for it.
Yeah.
Do what you love, because you'll never work a day in your life. And you believe that fully.
Cordelia runs off, and we get a shot of a very cool wanted poster of the Red Whirlwind. Conrad is furious that they will have to endure a famine on top of martial law. Cordelia says things will be even worse since the guards are rounding up everyone that they have even mild suspicion of. Conrad looks furious. I'm pretty sure this is the first time we've seen him get mad about general tyranny rather than his feelings as a Capulet retainer in general, but still says they need to hide it from Juliet, which brings me to a question. How? This ends up working for very specific reasons in the episode, but they don't appear to lock her in the theater. So did he think that she'd just walk around town and not notice both the curfew and the fact that people are starving?
Oh, also this episode, they are so unreasonable to her. Absolutely. Because the last episode, they were all like, oh, well, Juliet, you need to stop being weird, Roland. This is, you need to stop. You need to protect yourself. The rebellion needs you. You need to be safe. And so she takes a day off. I don't even think it's a full day off. And everyone's like, you're selfish. Look what happened since you've been gone. It's like, you guys think she took a month off and came back. Did you think she went to Neo Paris?
I mean, to be fair, Curio and Francisco are the people who get mad at her, and they are not the primary people who have been telling her to stop being the Red Whirlwind.
We're not even to that part yet.
Yeah, we are not.
Did I jump? I'm sorry, I jumped.
Yeah, this will come up much later in this episode, but it's good to have at least part of it out now. So, Juliet rushes back to the theater. I wrote Shakespeare here, but it's William, because we know that William is not Shakespeare, even though he is.
Shakespeare by any other name.
Shakespeare by any other name shakes as many spears.
William pokes his head out from the curtain and notices she's wearing less clothes than when she left. He asks if she was on a illicit rendezvous, and she does an extremely bad job of denying it. She is very lucky that she has never actually been asked by the guards if she's a Red Whirlwind, because I don't think she'd do a very good job of denying it.
I think she'd be able to deny that. I think it's specifically this thing that she struggles with.
Yeah. He says he can tell she's lying, both because she's blushing, and he could hear her heartbeat before her footsteps.
William is Daredevil.
William is like her gay fairy godmother.
William tells her, love is a clockwork beast, and those who stand in its way twist beneath its teeth. Mind, you let it run its course. So Juliet comes back, and Conrad, well, a bit grouchy, is surprisingly reasonable and tells her that if she's going to sneak out, she should tell someone. She apologizes, and Cordelia tells her that dinner's ready, so she goes upstairs to change. We get a cute scene where Juliet asks Cordelia if she could knit a shirt. When quizzed, she reveals it's for him, and Cordelia seems a bit concerned, but tells her to go for an embroidered handkerchief first. Juliet asks if she would use his full name, and Cordelia says, I would hope that you know that much about him by now. And Juliet smiles and blushes. We go over to Romeo, who wonders why Juliet disguised herself as a boy. He thinks about her dressing up as the Red Whirlwind, hiding her identity and the set of irises, and for a brief moment looks like he might figure it out, but then he stops because there's no way a girl as sweet as Juliet has a dark secret like that, because at the end of the day, he is both very sweet and extremely dumb.
In early episodes, y'all may have heard me try to stand up for Romeo. I will not in this version of the episode because I've seen him be even dumber.
Romeo is such a sweet and dumb boy.
He's just a golden retriever that can talk.
Yeah, he's basically just a humanoid golden retriever.
In later episodes we've recorded already, Curly fighting with me about whether or not Romeo's a himbo.
He's not.
He is.
He absolutely is.
The Supernatural anime that we'll be reviewing next, we're going to be having the DILF to Daddy pipeline discussion. So yeah, you'll have that to look forward to.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Romeo is still not a himbo. He looks like I could snap him over my knee. And
he really does not.
No, he does not.
He's pretty built. I don't know why you always say this, Coley.
He's a twunk. He's not a twink. He's a twunk. He's in between.
He's got muscles, and he's actually strong AF.
He's just lean.
Yeah. Anyways.
He's still not a himbo.
He is absolutely a himbo. Anyways, we get a scene of a man being dragged off on false accusations of being the Red Whirlwind. Captain Saruman confirms with the guy selling him out that the man is the Red Whirlwind, and then smugly throws him a bag of food. I didn't know that you could give somebody a bag of food in a way that is extremely dickish, but Saruman pulls it off. Miss Lancelot thinks that the man is terrible for selling out his neighbor, but Lancelot thinks the man is just as much a victim as anyone else, and that there's only one true culprit, and pointedly looks up at the Montague flag.
Like, I already respected Dr. Lancelot, but that moment, like, solidified it.
Yeah.
Lancelot is just a good man. Like, I would feel so safe with him.
Yeah. Kirio, while polishing his sword, reflects that he hasn't seen Juliet that day. Cordelia says that Juliet has been working all day on embroidering. He is surprised because he didn't know she knew how to embroider. We cut to a cute scene of Juliet looking at a lily and then her embroidery. An iris and then at her embroidery and then at the iris and then at her embroidery. And we can see that Kirio was definitely right. We cut to a much darker sequence where we see a whole bunch of people rounded up in cages. We hear a child begging for his father back. Lancelot sees this and is horrified. Then we see Captain Saruman smiling smugly and declaring that everything is going according to plan.
I just want to say Saruman smiling smugly is great. It's very,
it's a bit of a tongue twister, yes.
You said it very succinctly.
The priest says he's looking forward to seeing the plan succeed, and Lancelot sees him. Well, Romeo and Benvolio are flying. Romeo reflects that the city has a weird vibe. Benvolio mentions the situation and says that his father is mad he didn't get consulted, meaning that he's one of the one halfway decent noble is his dad. Romeo goes to intercede, but Benvolio stops him, noting that he would be destroyed regardless of family status if he interferes. He adds that if he waits for his father to die, he can still bring justice to Neo Verona.
Why wait? Sorry, was that too dark?
No. Plus, if I recall these episodes, we hit the note of Romeo should kill his dad, like, a lot.
We do.
Yeah, Romeo should kill his dad. His dad's a...
It's the hot new dating trend of 2021. Kill your abusive dad with your hot girlfriend.
I think that we've made this joke in several episodes as well.
We have. I put it in our podcast, in one of our podcast reviews.
Yeah.
Or I put part of it in one of our podcast reviews.
Yeah. The priest walks into his church and is surprised to see Dr. Lancelot making Gendo eyes. He threatens him and calls him a man of God who schemes and plots with the nobles, who would crush us like insects. At first, the priest looks scared, but then he grins and does an evil little chuckle and fires back with, "And what would you require of me, doctor? What choice do we have when people are weak? We are in no position to defy the prince. So yes, I yield to authority. There are times when one must sell his soul, where one must make difficult choices so as to survive one more day. Is that not the essential work of man, to find a place between the beaten and his betters in this grand tapestry? Smaller men must be ruled in order to be saved! The doctor throws him down and then walks away. We technically don't have a big badass villain speech from Montague this episode, but the priest filled in pretty well, I think.
Right? So did Saruman, though, too.
Yeah.
At least with some villainous quips.
Yeah. We see the crowd gathered around the cages. Lancelot sees Francisco and Curio and approaches them. He does cool secret agent shit and goes, "I would like to see the man who tends to the irises." So he's taken to Conrad, and the two of them have a discussion about Juliet using flower metaphors. I love this shit.
I love the secret agent bullshit. It reminds me so much of the early James Bond stuff where they're like, "Do you have a match?" "No, but I find a lighter works just as well."
Yeah. In the discussion, Conrad reveals Juliet's identity and that he has been thinking of telling Lancelot about her for some time. He tells Lancelot that the entire family is grateful to him. Lancelot leaves with a new determination, tells Conrad to tell her that all of Neo Verona is grateful to her. Francisco worries that the doctor is about to do something foolish. We cut back to Juliet, who is extremely proud of her embroidery. Antonio knocks on her door and tells her Conrad talked to the doctor. When she asks Conrad what's going on, he tells her it's not her concern and brushes past. When Cordelia sees she's running out and fails to stop her, she decides to go with her. Real talk, if everybody in the group is this ineffectual at both hiding things from her and stopping her from taking reckless actions, maybe they should tell her everything and help her do stuff, because clearly this is not working.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
We see the doctor smiling sadly at his kid's bedside. Miss Lancelot wonders how long the unrest will last. He asks her if she wants to move somewhere quieter, where the kids won't have to grow up like this. She agrees, and he takes her hand and says that maybe when she wakes up, it will be to a better world. The guards pour alcohol under the cages, which now have firewood under them. Juliet arrives and is horrified by what she sees. She asks Antonio what's going on, and he tells her. She runs to stop the situation and is blocked by Francisco and Curio. Francisco tells her that she must bear this because even the entire resistance as it stands would still not be enough. She tries to run and Curio fucking slaps her and says, "People cried out for justice while you sat pining for your privileged noblemen. And suddenly you have the wherewithal to act? This spoiled child is not the princess I swore to protect!" Meanwhile, Francisco gives the gentler, but perhaps even more brutal statement, "We protect you, for we have put all our hopes for a brighter future upon you. Cordelia's family, Curio's family, my own, we've all had loved ones sacrificed upon your altar."
Jesus fuck, guys.
Yeah.
That is so much pressure.
Yeah.
And it's so unfair.
It really is.
And not only is it unfair, it's straight up horrible to her. Because she's getting mixed signals from everyone. Half the people are telling her, "Stop doing what you're doing, you're putting yourself in danger." The other half are like, "What are you doing? You need to keep doing this." There is no plan with this rebellion. Other than the fact we need you alive and unharmed, okay, then what is the plan for the rebellion? At this stage, you are so disorganized. You don't know who your allies are. There's no plan other than keep Juliet alive. Do you magically think somehow you guys are just going to, like, swap her out with Montague? Like, he's going to go on vacation and you can just put her in there and she's just going to have squatters right at the palace? What is the plan?
I mean, it does seem like Conrad is building to something here, but, yeah.
It's not well-defined, and also, I understand the need for, like, the secrecy and stuff, but you need people.
Yeah.
As I've said before, and I'll say again.
Yeah, the rebellion is made up of various people who all seem to have, like, fairly different ideologies and ideas about what Julia is even supposed to do.
But also, they don't even have any, like, actual support, which I know isn't, like, the biggest thing, but it is something I have noticed.
Yeah.
And, like, you need support, and you need people who are gonna do things like print leaflets and shit.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they're still at very early stages, and we do get to see some stuff around that in, like, slightly later episodes.
But they're putting a lot more pressure on her than, like, the stage they're at requires.
I'm not sure that that's actually true. I think they're putting a lot of pressure on her and treating her fairly ruthlessly. But I think that she's going to need to have this pressure on her fairly long time before they get to later stages in their rebellion. So we hear the cries of the people. Juliet is horrified, and both Francisco and Curio are unable to look at what's happening. Juliet runs forward, only to be stopped by Lancelot. He tells her that she's exactly what he had hoped for, and that she should not risk herself now, because she is the future of Neo Verona. He runs off, and she tries to stop him, but he's too quick. He rushes in, changing into the Red Whirlwind costume while cursing the priests. Captain Saruman looks up, utterly confident in his victory. So yeah, that is the end of that episode. The episode preview is people round a show with a flower, rally, reaping quarrels for what their prayers will sow. Indifferent earth will choose the blossom's hour, and fickle love will make a red wind blow.
Really good episode.
Yeah.
I mean, very solid.
This whole series is really good, actually, but like...
Yeah.
You really get a lot of amazing action stuff in this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, did we want to talk about this episode much at all, or...?
Yeah, we should talk about the episode.
What's everyone's thoughts?
I thought it was pretty solid. There is kind of, like, there's a conflict set up here, which I'm really glad about, and I think it's overall a pretty strong episode. Is there a few things that I find a little frustrating with some of the characters? Yes, but I think that's fine, and I think we're supposed to be frustrated because we're supposed to feel like how Juliet feels in this situation.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the frustration with certain characters is a thing that we're meant to share. Yeah, and I like the fact that this episode really goes out of its way to show that the rebellion that... And this will be, like, a thing that later episodes show, too, is the fact that the resistance that follows Juliet is made up of people with, like, wildly different ideological framings for what they do. Like, Conrad is opposed to, like, the tyranny and stuff that's going on, but a lot of his feelings are tied up in his loyalty to House Capulet itself, whereas both Curio and Francisco seem to care about that a lot less, and like have like a slightly more personal loyalty to Juliet, even as they realize that they kind of have to like use her in very specific ways. Like Curio in previous episodes has been slightly more uncomfortable with this, while Francisco really has not, but which is also like an interesting difference between those two characters. And yeah, also Saruman, I know that Coley likes to use wrestling terms for things in fiction that's not necessarily wrestling. And Saruman definitely got some very good heel heat on this episode.
Oh my god, Saruman is the best heel.
Yes, I use wrestling terms a lot because they're just, I don't even watch wrestling, but it's just, you know, that much, but it's just...
They're very, like, fun terms, and it's very easy to use them.
Yeah.
Easy to understand.
Yeah.
While also being very descriptive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also liked how you've got people with different ideologies. You've got Kirio and Francisco, who are in it to end the tyranny. You've got Cordelia, who's kind of just in it because Juliet's in it. And then Conrad has that whole loyal to his house thing. And that is really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we even see like degrees of different ideological framing in the villains. Like Saruman is like very clearly just in it for the pure sadism of it. And then the priest has like this ideological dedication to being a bootlicker, basically.
He believes in authority, which is fitting for someone with the church, but maybe we should not go too far into that. We already did that at least once.
Yeah, so we're probably going to grab a quick break for commercials. And then we can go into the next one. And we're back. This episode is called Hope, Tomorrow Entrusted. We get a replay of some of the previous episode with Dr. Lancelot showing up as a red whirlwind and jumping on top of the cage. Captain Saruman remains an eternally over-the-top villain and says, "Our masked hero makes his entrance, and not a moment too soon." Because as much dedication Juliet has to be an extra superhero, he equals in sneering villain energy.
He equals Lord Montague in sneering villain energy, and I love it.
The people begin begging the Red Whirlwind to restore their family members to them. Dr. Lancelot demands the Carbonari release the prisoners since he's here. When Captain Saruman tells him to shut up, the people start forming a mob. One of the guards is annoyed and sends a flaming arrow before he's supposed to. Juliet moves forward, but Kirio stops her. The doctor pulls the arrow out. Captain Saruman finally releases the prisoners, but does it in such a way that makes it clear that he's still a dick. He threatens to cut off the Red Whirlwind's head and display it unmasked. The doctor says, "The Red Whirlwind must take his leave of you, but the storm will rage on. The unjust will shiver afresh, checked by the tempest. Open your heart to it, Neo-Varonans. Let it sit in the shoulder of your sail. Do this, and you shall hear it sing in the wind. Your freedom." He drops the arrow into the hay below, and his face does that cool thing from old anime, where for a brief moment, it changes from the more fluid animated style to a more still illustration.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I love that shit.
I actually, like, paused it just to, like, look at the illustration for a minute. It's so good.
Did it go away because of digital?
I think it must have.
Is there a digital animation equivalent so we can bring this back? Or do you just have, like, one guy do, like, one 2D one traditional 2D sequence?
Yeah, because it's so cool.
You could just pull it up in whatever drawing program you use, Photoshop or Krita or whatever.
Oh, that would be cool.
I'm honestly kind of surprised that Megalobox never did this.
I think we need to write Megalobox a strongly served letter.
Because Megalobox is very much a throwback thing. Anyways, the fire burns up to him. Juliet struggles forward to save him, but Kirio and Francisco hold her back. And we get a close-up of her crying face using the same art style. The flames rage. Juliet blames herself. The guards make everyone go home, which means that the guards who have been written to be extremely evil on this show still treat the civilian population rioting more reasonably than the ones in real life do.
Yeah, the like intentionally over-the-top evil cops are less evil than actual cops.
Yep. And Juliet runs away with Cordelia following her. Antonio expresses pity for her, and both Curio and Francisco silently agree. Romeo sees the fire and flies down. One of the guards says the fire could spread, and Sermon is like, I don't know, douse the roofs, I don't give a fuck. Romeo comes down and asks who the people are. Sermon says that they're just a bunch of malcontents, and that this beast with many heads howls the loss of the Red Whirlwind. Romeo is horrified because no one wants to hear their new girlfriend just set herself on fire.
That would be just pretty upsetting. If Jenny set herself on fire, I would be really mad.
Yeah.
Babe, I said you were smoking hot. I didn't mean like this, though.
When I said you were smoking hot, I wasn't talking about the ashes.
Oh my God. This podcast is gonna ruin me.
She used to have a banging bod, now she has a burning bod.
I'm burning for you.
I'm just a hunk of burning love.
So Saruman completely misreads the situation and brags about it some more. Romeo, flying above, sees Cordelia approaching Juliet and calls her name while flying down. Cordelia makes herself scarce. He is happy she's alive and says that he was certain she was a Red Whirlwind. A wind blows and she announces that this must be their last farewell. He uses wherefore correctly. She takes off her wig and identifies herself as a Red Whirlwind and does a fucking backflip off the balcony before running away because she does everything else super extra. So of course she breaks up in an extra way too.
I do have to say, I very much appreciate and kind of miss the dramatic exits that Juliet makes. Dramatic exits are wonderful.
We cut to the next day. Benvolio is complaining that the Carbonari was going to set innocent people ablaze, and that his father is going to punish Saruman. Romeo almost reveals the whole plot, but for once is canny enough to keep his mouth shut. We cut to Juliet, who looks both at her Red Whirlwind costume and the embroidered handkerchief. We arrive at what is apparently the House of Lords. Titus, Mercutio's father, arrives drunk and hails Benvolio's father as the beleaguered mayor. The first thing on the docket is a proposal to expand the Carbonari's power to arrest random citizens as traitors even further. Second, the creation of a home guard where people will act the physician and heal themselves, acting to carve out traitors in their midst. As Lord Montague looks down imperiously, it is announced that this will bring a new era of law and order because the worst people in the world were already making this argument at this point. The mayor points out that this will just extend rule by the sword even further. The lead lord looks like he wants to stop the speech, but Lord Montague stops him and tells the mayor to keep talking. The mayor points out that people resent the Carbonari more and more, and expanding their power will only make this worse. He points out a home guard will separate people into factions. Prince Montague defends himself, saying that a home guard will make people respect the police. He further says that the mayor acts like he wants to put his boot to the people's throat, but when a wayward child should err in word or deed, duty demands a father play the tyrant. Like an angel, he whips the offending Adam out of him, weeping all the while, which is a very creepy thing to say while your son is just, like, right next to you. He claims that families need order and that anyone who rages against a kinsman should be unworthy of their bond. He decides that since the mayor loves the rabble so much, he should become a commoner from now on. He adds this to the bail. Everybody but the mayor votes yes.
Cowards.
Every one of them.
Montague grins evilly while clapping, and the others clap with fear in their eyes. Romeo asks why his father has done this. Montague says it's because the mayor let the chaos run unchecked. But Romeo points out that this should mean the Carbonari should be punished. But Lord Montague pretty briefly says that that's a silly idea because the nobles retain that which empowers them. A.K.A. the police are there to enforce the class interests of the nobility. When I was first watching this episode, I was not expecting them to be quite this open about that being the reason. Yeah.
It's pretty refreshing, actually.
Yeah.
It's actually really refreshing, especially considering, like, things that happen later.
Yeah.
It's really nice to see this just pointed out.
Yeah. Juliet, Antonio, Francisco, and Curio are on a boat rowing through the canals. Antonio reflects that the doctor's family must not know what has happened yet. Francisco and Curio are grim-faced, and Juliet is sad. She says she'll be all right with false cheer. Francisco is noticed by the fangirls he apparently has, who throw flowers down at him. He flirts back shamelessly, and Curio is annoyed. When a flower falls on his head, Curio is mad and reminds Francisco they have a mission. Francisco agrees that they are on a mission, but says that men need things that gladden them, even Curio, who he pokes.
I just want Francisco and Curio to go make a gay life together.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want them to make a gay life together. And something else that I'm not going to say yet because it's related to another episode.
Yeah.
Honestly, they're such 2000s yaoi ship bait. I love it.
I think that it was in this episode that I first told you all, in the original recording of this, I mean, that their fan nickname was Faye and Kurogane.
Because of Clamp's Tsubasa Chronicles.
Yep. The two of them continue to argue while Juliet wonders how she'll face the doctor's family. Benvolio's family ride away in a carriage. They're about to be searched by the guards, but then Romeo arrives to see them off. Benvolio tells him he'll be fine and that he's worried about Romeo more than anything, and that if Romeo should ever need anything, all he needs to do is whistle. Romeo says the two of them wear a golden chain. They ride off, and it's very sad and gay.
This whole episode is very sad, and parts of it are gay.
Yeah. At the Lancelot's home, Miss Lancelot says that they're moving to the country as Antonio entertains the kids. She talks about how her husband wants them to be safe. Everyone looks sad, but then she surprises them by saying that her husband has told her that the iris, so abused of late, will soar again. When the kids ask where their father is, she tells them that their father will stay behind because Neo Verona needs a doctor. She says they need to pray for him every day so he can give Neo Verona his all. Everyone, including the audience, looks sad.
Especially the audience, Jesus.
This was like Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. And the original, like, when May Hughes' funeral dies. Like, it's a good day for rain, definitely.
Yeah. One of the kids tells Curio, "You're strong, Mr. Giant." Curio seems bemused by this. Francisco gives them extra money. He tells them the Carbonari at the North Gate are still honorable men. As she leaves, Miss Lancelot repeats some of her husband's words and tells Juliet he lives on in her. Juliet is in tears, and so is the audience.
This whole sequence is just heart-wrenching.
It really is. As they go back, Juliet wonders why Miss Lancelot doesn't hate her for her husband's death. Francisco points out that the doctor knew what his sacrifice would bring, and in his last moments, he became the Red Whirlwind. A cloaked figure says that Benvolio's family is going to be killed on the prince's orders. The whole group, minus Antonio, rush off to save them. Benvolio asks his mother not to cry. She points out they're banished from their home. I'm just gonna note something here. Benvolio's mother seems to be the only, her voice actress seems to be the only person on the show who did an Italian accent, and because nobody else did it, it feels kind of odd.
Very odd decision. I'm very curious what the voice acting director thought about this.
Yeah. Benvolio's father says that wherever his family is home, and that they've still got stuff. The coach stops, and the driver stabs Benvolio's father. A whole group of menacing cloaked figures surround them, but Juliet and the crew arrive to protect them. Curio and Francisco take on the whole crew as Juliet leads the father to safety. The coachman throws a knife, and Juliet jumps to block it with her sword, but drops the sword in the process. The coachman is about to kill her, but at the last minute, she's saved by an edgy-looking man riding in on his dragon steed.
It's a motherfucking mysterious figure!
Yes! Yep. We know who this is, but we're not going to tell you.
Juliet picked up, like, the mysterious stranger perk.
Yeah.
Now she's getting ready to go into the Dead Money DLC.
So, the episode preview is, though knowing well the world will bear it not, the Azure yearns to mingle with the Red. And the Crimson, for its part, the Blue has sought. These gentle feelings, full of things unsaid. So, I thought that was a very good episode.
It was really great.
God, yes.
Yeah.
It's very sad. We get the big heroic sacrifice. We get like a lot of like really sad stuff afterwards. I like the fact that this show is very consistent about trying to show like the consequences of the whole situation. And when characters die, it usually feels like it has a real weight to it.
It really does. And we get our first heartbreaking moment in this anime, in this episode, and it's damn.
Yeah.
And I know we aren't going to talk too much about future stuff, but I will say that, like, going back and rewatching it now, after having seen further ahead, there were some things that made more sense this time around.
It kind of showed how, over the series, my opinions on certain characters changed. I don't think I'm going to say specifically, but like, oh, I look more fondly upon certain characters because either the plot finally allowed for things to carry on further in later episodes. I think the pacing definitely picked up a lot more in later episodes. Because I think at the end of the series, when we do like, you know, at the end of the series, what we think, I think the pacing is definitely the only thing I gripe with.
Yeah, I'm going to agree, and I'm also going to say that there were definitely characters who, when I was there was definitely a specific character who, while I was rewatching this, I was just like, why do I like this character so much? This character seems like a real asshole that I would like. And then I saw the second half of the series, I was just like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, we normally do predictions here.
But that would be ridiculous. Yeah, that would be absolutely absurd.
So instead, something just as absurd, I want to tell some Shakespeare jokes.
Okay.
Why did Pup cross the road?
I don't know why.
He saw someone he knew over on the other side.
Fuck you.
Contempt.
That's a good one.
Contempt.
Zeb, you know that was a good joke.
Do you have others?
Please have others.
No. I'm no Willie. Or shake my spear, but don't. I'm banned. I'm canceled. I'm going in the garbage.
Elizabeth, I think yes. You're barred from making Shakespeare puns.
Goddamn. Okay, that was good.
I'm blocked. I'm...
Unsubscribe.
Unlike. Dislike. reporting you now as we speak. You're getting demonetized.
Why did Shakespeare write exclusively in ink?
I don't know why.
Pencils were confusing to him. To be or not to be?
This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime and our podcast, other podcast hosts, is not. I am Zeb Berryman, and this has been Anime's Journey to the West. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Anime's Journey TW, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not.